from Louisville Public Media. Last night, Louisville Metro Council approved a zoning change that will pave the way for Unity Place. It's an affordable housing complex in the Okolona neighborhood that would also include some housing for refugees. Since the project was introduced, nearby property owners have been very vocal about their concerns.
My next door neighbor is Hispanic, Cuban, as they like to say. Well, Cuban. Next door to him is another Cuban. Down at the end of the street, there are folks of Asian descent. I have no idea their exact ethnic background, but we're already diverse. We don't need any more diversity.
The zoning change process is itself complicated for council members. They have to balance following the rules with what their constituents want, even when what they want goes against the rules. City reporter Amina Alahi has been covering the story, and she joins us today on Recut. I'm Jonice Franklin.
You want me to explain the process?
Yes. So the zoning process?
The zoning change process.
Okay. Right.
Yes.
The zoning change process, which really sounds super sexy and interesting.
Oh, it is. If you want to get the zoning of any parcel of land changed, I mean, in the research that I did, typically there's a proposal that's driving that change. So a developer says, I want to put in multifamily housing, for example, on this parcel of land that is currently zoned for some other purpose. So they hold a neighborhood meeting. They let all the nearby property owners know that they can come and hear about the project, express their concerns, and have a conversation. After that, they can submit a formal application, and eventually it ends up in front of the Planning Commission.
The Planning Commission can take public feedback on the proposal, but the commission doesn't actually decide whether a zoning change will happen. They just make a recommendation to the Metro Council. If the Planning Commission okays the rezoning, the proposal moves on to a council committee. The committee is supposed to decide whether the change would comply with Louisville's comprehensive plan. If it does, they can pass it on to the full council for a vote. The committee or the full council can introduce binding elements. That's certain conditions the developer would have to meet. Or they can reject the proposal altogether. And Amina says if they do that, they have to do their own research and present their reasoning for the rejection.
Which means they essentially have to write a new ordinance that says, we did our own research, and here's why we think that this proposal does not meet the comprehensive plan.
So they can't just vote something down. They can't just say, no, I'm against it.
Exactly.
They have to give a valid reason.
Right, because otherwise, I think it's supposed to be a protection for the process and also protection for them. But essentially, they have to justify their opposition to the Planning Commission's recommendation. So they would have to come in and say, here are the specific things that we found that are in violation of the comprehensive plan. And then they have to get 14 votes, which is the Metro Council is 26 people. So that's a majority. They have to get 14 votes, even if only 14 people are there voting that night. Like it has to be a majority of the entire Metro Council, not of those present and voting.
Oh, wow.
So it's a high bar. They can't just come in and say, no, we don't want it. And say, for example, the ordinance is written without those alternative findings of fact. And it's written to say that they would approve the Planning Commission's recommendation. Even if everyone voted against it, it would still go into effect because the way Kentucky law is written, without the alternative findings of fact, the Planning Commission's recommendation goes into effect 90 days after their final vote, which in this case was in October.
Okay.
Part of the nature of this process is that when you're talking about zoning changes near residential areas, you hear a lot from property owners because their home is probably the biggest investment they've ever made.
Sure.
Or one of. So it does make sense that you would have people coming out and saying, wait, is this a good idea or is this going to mess up my neighborhood? Is this going to affect my property values? Is this going to, anything that would potentially hurt that investment?
With the vote on Unity Place last night, there was a lot of public input about that for this specific reason, and probably many other reasons, I guess.
Sure. And that seems to be the case with multifamily requests in general.
Mm-hmm.
I looked back at records available online, so that includes those official records from the Planning Commission that I mentioned, as well as videos of public hearings and other official meetings. And you see a lot of feedback. And I talked to the lawyer for the applicant in the Unity Place zoning case. His name is John Baker. He's a land use attorney here, and he used to be with the Jefferson County Attorney's Office for more than a decade. And he said in his experience, he's seen that multifamily zoning requests in general get a lot of response, and affordable housing proposals even more than that.
These type of cases definitely do, in my opinion, receive more opposition than typical. Now, don't get me wrong, in the past 10 years, let's say, let's just use a round number, you do receive opposition to multifamily housing, whether that's market rate or one that's been discussed as offering affordable housing, especially as it relates to the location. But oftentimes you'll see a heightened level of opposition when it's been disclosed that affordable housing is a component of the development that's being proposed.
And I asked him to describe that a little more, and he was hesitant. I mean, he's an attorney, right? He said, I can't get into people's minds or hearts, and, I don't know exactly what they were thinking, but he described a tone that was a bit more defensive.
It seems like it's a heightened tone, a less welcoming tone than just having an objective argument about an issue, say traffic, for example. Now, don't get me wrong, this happens too with regular development. People are protecting what they believe is their property interests. I think multifamily in general, you'll see heightened discussion, longer debate, and affordable housing multifamily will even more than that. So sometimes people believe their own beliefs of what residents of affordable housing projects, their perceptions aren't necessarily what is reality. And I think that drives fear.
Tell me about Unity Place. What is it?
It's an apartment complex, a proposed apartment complex. It would be 260 units. It's in the Okolona neighborhood. And in addition to being affordable housing, it would include some housing for refugees. And they're working with Catholic Charities and Kentucky Refugee Ministries to get that going.
So I assume that council members were really hearing it from their constituents.
I think some of them were.
Yeah. But going back to what you said, council members, when they're voting on something like this, they're not supposed to really. Is it fair to say that council members are not supposed to take into account what the people in their districts are saying to them or their opinions about it in this case?
I'm trying to think of the right way to describe how they're supposed to consider that feedback, because obviously the public is allowed and I would say encouraged to provide that feedback. And obviously these are elected officials who represent maybe some of the same people who are providing that feedback. So it is a challenge to try to listen to the commentary, which may be coming in the form of records from the Planning Commission or from those public hearings that the Planning Commission holds, or maybe coming directly to the council person. Like maybe there's a group of organized neighbors who are calling their council person, who are writing letters, showing up at their office, running into them at the grocery store, right. Whatever it is. But the bottom line is that they have to be able to hear all that stuff and kind of process it and then still go back and make their decision based on the official record and whether or not the proposal adheres to the comprehensive plan.
When the noise is loud, if it's loud, how are they supposed to drown that out if it goes against what they feel like the rule says? That's interesting to me.
Well, sometimes the comments might be relevant.
Sure.
There might be people who come and say, listen, I checked out the property, and I feel that you granting this waiver for, say, not planting more trees or something.
Right.
Like, I think that's inappropriate for whatever reason. So that refers to the actual land use. And that may be the type of thing that a person could go to the Planning Commission and say, please, please take this into consideration. And at that point, the Planning Commission could say, okay, you know, that's relevant. I will take that into consideration. But if someone comes up and says, our neighborhood is already diverse, we don't really need this.
Was that some of what people were saying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So when someone says that, that has nothing to do with land use.
Right. So they're not talking about traffic. They're not talking about, I don't know, what the other arguments against would
be. Yeah, there are plenty of other things they could talk about. They could talk about traffic. They could talk about density,
mm-hmm.
public transit access, green space. All that stuff is relates to the physical proposal. So the concern with affordable housing proposals is that some of the feedback starts to bleed into the who's going to live there, not the what are they going to live in.
Is that mostly with affordable housing projects?
According to what I reviewed, yeah. I mean, you see when you look at other zoning requests for multifamily, there's a lot of concern about infrastructure, like are the roads good enough? Can they handle the traffic? Is a sewer system, which we know is not awesome, is that able to handle, you know, this scale of development, that type of thing? And you hear people talk about property values, but sometimes if you follow sort of the entire thread of a person's feedback, you can see that when they're talking about property values, they're also talking about things like crime or other things that can indicate what they expect the people who live in that housing to be like or behave like.
Mm.
So that's not, that is, ideally, officials would not take that into consideration. Now, is it possible to ignore that if you're hearing a lot of it? I don't know. I mean, it's, I think it's a lot to ask if you have people calling you all the time.
And, yeah.
And I mean, I think probably if you were a person who wanted to be smart about your feedback, you would understand what they're allowed to consider and what they're not. And mm-hmm. you would tailor what you're saying based
sure.
on that.
Sure. I wonder how many people know, though, that they're not supposed to really take into account public input in this case. It's also weird to ask for public input and then to have to sort of set it aside.
It's not that they can't take public input into consideration.
Okay.
It's that when they make the decision eventually, they have to be able to point to how it adheres to the comprehensive plan. And if, for example, they want to introduce binding elements, which, like I said, are conditions that you place on the development, those can't come out of nowhere. That can't come from someone walked up to me somewhere and said, I think this building needs a security guard, for example.
Uh-huh.
That has to come from the official record. So maybe it was something that was discussed in a prior meeting, or, you know, there's some sort of agreement with the developer already, or, you know, it has to tie back to something that's already been discussed when it comes to the council level. They can't just, like, conjure things. So that's what I mean by not taking public feedback inappropriately. And
okay.
when it comes to the feedback that's given to the Planning Commission, the Planning Commission is totally able to say, for example, okay, I hear, and this is something that John Baker, that attorney, he said that he's seen the Planning Commission say things like, okay, I hear that the top three concerns you all have are traffic, density, and transit access or whatever. And if people are talking about racist stuff, they might just, like, try to make a statement by not stating that as mm-hmm. as one of the top concerns. Like, they're basically saying, here's what we're going to focus on. And if they hear a lot of people concerned about traffic, then maybe they'll take a closer look at that. You know, maybe
yeah.
they'll say, okay, these people live there. Let's explore that a little further. And that's fine. The feedback has to come through the proper channels, and it has to be relevant. I talked to Bill Hollander, who is the councilman for District 9,
mm-hmm.
and he is on the Planning and Zoning Committee. And I talked to him because I had had a prior conversation with him in which he expressed some concern that council members, perhaps because of the level of public feedback that affordable housing cases get, may run into issues with being fair in how they assess those proposals or maybe in the conditions that they place on them. And he doesn't think that the council is doing a bad job, but the sense I got from him was that he thinks there's a risk because of exactly what we're talking about. You know, you get a lot of feedback. It's hard to filter it out. And there's a lot of material. I mean, I've been looking through these official records, and sometimes they're like 200 pages long and there are hours of testimony. Like, there's a lot of stuff there. So I imagine that it would be difficult to remember where you heard something or where you read something sometimes. So I think his point was that people just need to be vigilant in making sure that the decisions they make are based on what's allowed by the law, which is that it should adhere to the comprehensive plan. And he also said that he thinks that council members should always ask themselves whether if they would approach a market rate proposal the same way.
In many cases, if you look at the record before the Planning Commission, I mean, it's pretty clear that people are talking about the people who are going to live there. They talk about things like we don't need any more diversity, explicitly say that kind of thing, talk about how this is going to lower my property value because that's what happens with affordable housing. So clearly you see some of that. And when you have concerns about traffic or when you have concerns about a sidewalk or you have other kind of concerns, those concerns should be listened to. The key, I think, is to treat that concern the same way you would for a market rate project. But we do have market rate projects where people say, you shouldn't build this apartment building here because the streets are inadequate. And we have a council member here who says that about many, many of these projects. And yet they go through because we can't stop every apartment project because the streets aren't perfect that are next to it. We have to apply those same standards to affordable projects. And so certainly you listen to comments that this project is not appropriate because of the streets, but you have to say, I think, to yourself, if this was market rate, would this stop this project? And we can't have two different standards.
Recut is produced by Louisville Public Media. Our executive producer is Laura Ellis. Our news director is Erica Peterson. Kojin Tashiro wrote our theme song. Special thanks today to reporter Amina Alahi. You can read Amina's story at WFPL.org. We'll be back after the holidays. I'm Jonice Franklin. Thanks for listening.